Hi, this is Mark Wade, writer of Daredevil, and you're listening to Longbox Heroes.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 352 of Longbox Heroes. I'm Todd, joined with Joe. How are we doing today, Joe?
I'm doing good. I feel good. It's like we got an early start in the day or something.
That is what we get the worms here on this show, Joe.
Right. Well, not so much worms, but me and my son play night crawlers, so.
Oh, that's good. That's good. That's my favorite game. So how you doing?
I'm doing good. Did I ever tell you about that where I did that with Asa when we'd be like wrestling on the bed or whatever it was?
No, you've never told me about your Nightcrawler adventures with Asa.
Right. And I you know, obviously I make the joke for April that Asa and I should just play Nightcrawlers and the blankets could be the dirt.
Mm-hmm.
He, with no context, thinks this is the funniest thing he's ever learned and just can't stop laughing. For like 5 minutes, he's just cracking himself up laughing. And I'm like, oh, buddy, wait till you're 11 and I let you watch that show.
11, huh?
Well, if it was up to me, it'd be now, but...
I was going to say, he has to wait that
long. His mother runs
a
tight ship around here.
Uh-oh. Well, what does his dad think?
You know, I'm good to go. I'm up for anything.
Oh, that's right, you. That's right. My mistake.
Oh, my goodness.
Anyway, would you like to know what we have on the show today?
Hey, Todd, do we have a podcast today?
That's right. We have a comic book podcast. Not an ordinary podcast, but a comic book podcast. We're light on news today, new Marvel titles, and also an award show that, you know, I think still should be Longbox Heroes Awards, but that's a whole nother story. We'll get to that.
Who has more cachet in the business, Todd? We're going to find out.
That's right. Probably not us. Also, con news, free digital books and sales. What we read last week, which was Peter Parker's Spider-Man number 1 and Batman number 25, what we were looking forward to most. And also, I'm going to do a review of Aquaman 25.
Interesting.
Yes. What we're looking forward to this week, Joe and Todd and Joe have issues, which was Deadpool 11, which was interesting, and no TV talk at the end, I guess.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Full disclosure. We'll talk about it a little bit more on Gallifrey Birds, but I'm running on very little sleep over these last couple days, and I had every intentions of watching the recently returned comic book related TV show.
Okay.
So that just means next week we'll possibly have 3 episodes to possibly discuss of this show that will not speak its name.
Fair enough, because there were things uttered last week that made me think that we were, but anyway, we'll move on and we'll discuss.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's it. So let's get into the news that you mentioned. So Marvel this past week had a announcement that they claimed was going to change the comic book industry. They really said this.
Right, and it will never be the same. Never.
Right, until the next time. So they announced that coming this September, they are going to do Marvel Legacy. Now, what is unclear is what that exactly means. We don't have any creative teams. We don't have if some of these books are going back to their original numberings and so forth. But one of the things that we did see was a bunch of JPEGs that were sent out that were homages to old covers to announce the returns of these new books.
Mm-hmm.
Like they took the classic... And some of them are a little bit more classic than others. They took the cover of the Death of Captain Marvel graphic novel, and they recreated that as an homage for the Death of the Mighty Thor.
Right.
They did one for an Iron Man cover for Falcon, the infamous giant size X-Men number 1 with Spirits of Vengeance number 1. Now, the other thing that I want to mention, of course, is since we don't know a lot of the creative teams on some of these books, I think that we do because there's not a ton of new books being added. Mm-hmm. There are a couple books that are going away, but some of the books that are being added, Deadpool is becoming the Despicable Deadpool. Captain America, Sam Wilson, I would assume is becoming Falcon. There are zero Captain America books on the docket, which is interesting. Totally Awesome Hulk is going back to being Incredible Hulk. There is only Invincible Iron Man. No longer is there an Infamous Iron Man. They are bringing back Marvel 2-in-1. And they are also bringing back as the aforementioned Spirits of Vengeance. And Moon Knight is coming back.
Hmm.
Other than that, it's pretty much everything that's being published by Marvel. 52 titles in all, Todd.
Where have I heard that number before?
I don't know. Maybe about 6 years ago around the same time. But anyway, you can't judge. I like the gimmick that they did with the covers to show them off. I do know that Jason Aaron is going to be writing something in Marvel 2-in-1 because he just came right out and said it.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm looking forward to writing stories in Marvel 2-in-1. I've got pitches already submitted.
Okay.
But other than that, we'll see where this goes. I'm intrigued that they announced this. Obviously, I'm intrigued that they didn't announce any creative teams for most of this stuff. But like I said, since it's a lot of the same books that we already have, I don't think we're going to get much creative team shakeup on this.
Right. I don't know. I'm a sucker for the gifts too. So my favorite was the Iron Man one on one of my favorite covers, Iron Man 150. So I got that. But like I said, I don't know. I have to see how this all shakes out, see who's where, who's what. If Marvel 2-in-1 turns out to be, whether or not it's a Thing Human Torch team up, or it's like the old Marvel 2-in-1s where it's Thing all the time with somebody else, or it's going to be, a team up book of whoever. That's where I want to, because if it's like the old Marvel 2-in-1s, all Thing all the time, Todd is all in on that. So we'll have to see, like I said, as it shakes out.
Right. And just trying to look at some of the other things that popped out on this was also no Fantastic Four. We had discussed that there might have been speculation that the Fantastic Four were coming back, but there is no Fantastic Four book on the docket either.
Or they're just hiding it for now. You never know. It might come out of Legacy, and then you'll have Fantastic Four running around in one of the 9 Michael Brian Bendis books, Brian Michael Bendis books, and then you'll have, it spin out into its own thing. You never know.
You never know.
I'm hoping.
But I'm excited. I still like Marvel. I know I talk to a lot of people that are just kind of fed up with both Marvel and DC. But, there's still good books in there. Just don't go crazy and get everything.
Get what you like. Cut it down if you have to. Go get some Image and other independent. But like I always say, when somebody asks me, what should I buy? I'm like, what, you want to make money? Because you ain't going to make money in this business. Buy what you like, and you'll be around a lot longer. That's what I tell everybody. So, buy what you like.
So, more on not having to buy everything a little bit later on in the show, but we'll get there.
Mm-hmm.
So, they just announced, we did a story a few months ago that the Harvey Awards, which were a staple of Baltimore Comic Con, are no longer going to be at Baltimore Comic Con. It was Reed Pop who purchased the Harveys, and I think are doing it at New York Comic Con, correct?
I believe that's where they are doing it.
Right. So we had postulated on the show that Baltimore should come to us and do a Long Box Heroes award show.
Right.
And unfortunately, that did not come to pass.
That's not the news?
No. So they are doing the Mike Waringo Comic Book Industry Awards. Their voting is good for the next 3 weeks, and I think I'll put the link to the voting in the show notes, of course. But the press release here for it says, Pro and Fan Comic Book Awards come to America's Greatest Comic Book Convention, and you get a vote. So they say that it's going to be at Baltimore Comic Con, the inaugural 2017 Industry Awards. Ballots are open for the next 3 weeks. Creators and new works published during 2016 are eligible. And there's no multiple choice. It's essentially you fill in what you want. It's best writer artist, like who does both. Best writer, best artist, best inker, best letterer, best colorist, best cover artist. Best continuing or limited series, best single issue, best original graphic novel, best anthology, best humor, best comic strip or panel, best web comic, best nonfiction, best presentation in design, favorite hero, favorite villain, favorite new series, and favorite new talent.
Hmm. Those are all the ones we would have had.
Right, exactly. It's like they took the list that everyone in the world would use and us, go from there. So it looks like it's a mix of, you know, you got your fan awards and your other awards, whether it be the Eisners or the Harveys. There's a lot of stuff in there. But the fact that they're opening it up to fans is going to make for a lot of interesting choices, I say. Because, I will say this, they do make you go through a lot of hoops to get to the actual ballot.
So you won't be making multiple accounts.
You can, but it's going to take a lot of work.
Right. This reminds me of the old Wizard Awards. That's what this. That's what they're borrowing. But I think it's cool. I think it's a cool one to have something that, you know, that the fans all, you know, vote on, and it's cool. And I'm glad Harvey's that Baltimore got something back, because I was sad when they left, because Baltimore is the best, one of the best Comic Cons ever.
Absolutely. And, still like it's still up in the air whether or not I'm going this year or not. I'm still thinking about it.
You're thinking about it?
Yeah, because I miss going, you know?
Mm-hmm. I was thinking. Actually, in breaking news, I might be going to New York now.
Oh, really?
I'm not 100% sure, but I might be going to New York. I have the option to use a ticket.
Oh, boy.
So I'm just going to say, somebody we know who might or might not be in the industry winking at the microphone is going to be at New York and might have an extra ticket.
Gotcha. So, yeah, you know, it's up for 3 weeks. So, you know, if you feel very strongly about something, go vote.
Right.
Make your voice heard.
That's right. That's why we're living in a democracy.
So I do want to say that's really all we got in news, unless you got something really burning a hole in your pocket about either one of these.
No, it was light week, so I'm sticking to that.
Right. So I want to kind of get into this for conventions this week. There's two big conventions going on this weekend. One is called Blurred Con. It's B-L-E-R, and then D-C in the middle, O-N. See how they weaved all that together?
Mm-hmm.
So it appears to be kind of a catch-all, pop culture-y sort of thing. You got a lot of video game stuff. You've got a lot of cosplay-type stuff. They're in the D.C. area. I'm just looking at the rest of the guests here. See who jumps out at me on the list. Yeah, again, a lot of, it seems to be a more heavy cosplay thing, again, but I do want to spend a little bit more time on that one. One, because DC is relatively close to where we are. But also, the other convention that's happening this weekend is Denver Comic Con. Now, you're going to say, Joe, you mentioned Denver Comic Con last week. Well, the problem is, the site that I go to get this information had Denver listed for last week and this week. And the only thing I hate more than you being a convention and you only having a Facebook page that I can't access from my shoot job,
mm-hmm,
is having a site that's either difficult to read, or when I go to the site, the first thing that I see is not the dates of the show. And that's the Denver Comic Con. If you just go to their site, the date of the show is not the first thing that pops up.
What's the first thing that pops up?
The list of the guests. And on each little slide for each of the guests, nowhere on there does it say anywhere what day or time the show is.
Oh, That's not good advertising.
Absolutely not. So I implore you, comic book conventions, fix your websites, make them readable, spend a couple cents on a WordPress site so I don't have to be fishing through a Facebook page on my phone at work so I can get your plugs in correctly.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, because, you know, I worry about getting the plugs in right. So.
Right. As we learned, you don't even read these emails, so it's fine.
No. I read some of the email you sent me.
Right.
Just what I feel I need to be ready to go at the right time.
That's, oh, yeah. So, again, like I said, not a lot of conventions this weekend, of course. So, if you're not traveling this weekend and you're home alone, this is time that you could use to spend listening to the soon-to-be-named network at soon-to-be-named-network.com or soon-to-be-named-network.tumblr.com. You can check out all the shows in the soon-to-be-named network. I'm going to attempt to do this from memory, so bear with me here. You got us, of course, Longbox Heroes. You got Longbox Heroes After Dark. Now, there's another competing show to ours that next week is going to be talking about In Your House Canadian Stampede. Doot, listen to them. Listen to us first and kind of get initiated with that event if you never saw it.
Right, because I never saw it.
Prodigal Sons is threatening to come back. Talking Gimmicks came back through much malaise. They didn't get it up on YouTube, but Joey finally got a SoundCloud page to get the audio-only versions of those, saving me a step. Thank you very much.
SoundCloud. I remember when they used to put shows up on SoundCloud.
I remember when people told you it cost money to do it.
Ah.
Fresher in Parlance, Profane Argument, Podvocacy, Once Jason's Hands Are Repaired, Paladins of Voltron Might Come Back.
when he's a cyborg.
Yes. It turns out, Todd, he likes being shocked in his hands.
Oh, that's good.
Aim Downsides Podcast and Puzzle Warriors 3. Anytime any of these shows go out live or any of the people on these shows are on other shows and they remind me, it'll also be put up on soon-to-be-named-network.com, soon-to-be-named-network.tumblr.com.
Hmm.
So, digital sales and freebies this week, and there's a bunch. Holdovers from last week is the Indie Pride sale and the Dark Horse Future is Female sale. Fantagraphics is having a sale on a bunch of their collections of the Peanuts comic book. Titan is having a sale on the 12th Doctor comic books.
Mm.
That's a thing that you want. I don't know.
Many people want those, so don't you badmouth them.
Okay, both of them enjoy. DC is having a sale that's simply Justice League vs. Suicide Squad. Now, I'll say this. It seems to be leaning a little bit more heavy on the Suicide Squad end of things. Because you've gotten more of the New 52 and the Rebirth Justice League stuff. You've got three issues of a six-part miniseries of formerly known as the Justice League. You've got six issues of a 12-issue miniseries of Justice League Elite. You've got the first six issues of Justice League Europe for some reason. You've got the first five issues of Justice League Task Force, again, for some reason. But the crown jewel of this sale, if there ever was one, is the first five trades of the 80s John Ostrander Suicide Squad book.
Great book.
You can pick up each of the trades for $6 a pop. And those are some of the best comics ever published.
Did I lend those to you back in the day?
No, you did.
I vaguely remember lending you Suicide Squad.
Maybe you did.
I think I did.
Because I know I actually, now that they've put them back into the print, I actually have the actual trades.
But I think back in the day, I remember giving them to you in like 12-issue runs.
That sounds like a thing that could have happened, but that's all the way over there, Todd.
Hey, I just something sparked a memory in my dulled brain, and that was one of them.
Mm-hmm. Now, again, they're also Marvel is having a sale on Amazing Spider-Man stuff for some reason. It's like there's a movie or something coming out.
Mm.
A couple Hunker things down. That I do want to mention with this is, included in the sale is the entire run of Superior Spider-Man, one of the best comic book runs of the past however many years. Highly recommended. And they also have the just recently wrapped up as of like 3 months ago, Clone Conspiracy storyline. Now, this is the first time that I've ever seen Comixology do this, where they have it blocked off as the correct reading order of the books. Because okay. there was the main Amazing Spider-Man book, there was a Clone Conspiracy miniseries, and then things trickled over into the Silk book and the Prowler miniseries. And they have it all there, broken up in the correct reading order.
Wow.
Which is awesome.
That's interesting.
Right.
That is awesome, because that is a digital thing that would screw me up.
Oh, yeah. Especially when it's like A-A-A-A-C-A-C-A-S-C-A-S. You know what I mean? You're trying to find through your collection, and I would assume that if you bought them in this way, it would pull up like, okay, if you purchase them all, it's going to lead you the right way if you purchase them all that way.
Right. I'm actually curious how all that works, now that you mention it.
Yes. So if you do partake in that sale, let us know how that works. So some of the digital freebies, of course, we do include those in the show notes. The new ones from Marvel are Black Widow number one, not the Mark Waid one, not the one that Todd liked from before, but the one before that.
I don't know that one, not the Phil Noto.
That's not what the sale is. Oh my goodness, I have old notes here, I apologize.
Which one is it then?
Shameful. Okay. So here's the real things that are on that are up there for free. The first issue of the Fear Itself miniseries. The first issue of the 80s Punisher War Journal. The first issue of the Dan Slott She-Hulk, which is a really good comic. And the first issue of the Mark Waid Daredevil run.
Good run.
All really good free comic books. Fear Itself, I'm not 100% sure on. And I'm sure Punisher War Journal is good for a larf. Now, the other thing that I want to mention is if, we talked before about the Marvel Legacy stuff, where to jump in, what to get, I don't know where to start, all that sort of thing. If you head over to marvel.com/redeem, I know if you purchase your books in print, they've brought back the digital redeem codes. So that you get not only the book that you're purchasing, but also another book of something else. Whereas there was a 3 month or 4 month stretch there where you didn't get the book that you were purchasing, but you were getting like 3 to 4 issues of something else, some random thing. So, if you're over at marvel.com/redeem, put in the code Iceman, and you get, with putting in that code, the digital copies of the new Weapon X book, the new X-Men Gold book, the new X-Men Blue book, Cable, the new Generation X book, the new Jean Grey book, and the new Iceman book. And when I say new, I mean these are books that are 1 to 3 months old.
That's new.
That's new. So if you're wondering what's going on with those X-Men, you can find out what's going on with all of them for free. At least their first issues. So we're providing a service on the show.
That's right, a free service.
Right. So, digital sales and freebies out of the way, plugs and stuff like that are out of the way. Let's get into what we read from this past week, Todd. Where would you like to begin?
Let's start with something we definitely both read. How about that?
All right. So, we both read Batman number 25, which is written by Tom King with art by
Mikhail Janine?
Yes. I knew it was Mikhail. I didn't have it right in front of me.
Oh, wait until we hit Aquaman, boy.
So this is the beginning of the War of Riddles and Jokes book. Now, I will say this. As I'm using my time today wisely to critique the way that major companies are setting up their websites, when you go to the DC website for the releases for that week, for some reason the Batman book is not in their little scroll. You have to search it in their search system to find it there. I don't know why. I think they did it just to make me mad.
A lot of people seem to do that.
And neither is Aquaman, just so you know.
But you did find it.
I did find them, but if you are trying to find them, it might be difficult. And by by you, I mean the royal you.
Right.
So, what did you think of this one, Todd?
I really liked it. It's basically the setup for the War of Jokes and Riddles. It's the Riddler in Arkham or somewhere. I'm guessing Arkham. You know, doing his plan to get out. And while this is going on, it seems that the Joker has kind of lost his luster for things, both funny and murderous. So
he seems to have lost his smile.
Yes. So we have that and how their stories, seem to, intertwine in that the Riddler goes to the Joker and tells him, like, we all know how this is all going to end someday. We should team up. Just to take down the bat, there, we could definitely do it. It does not go well. And this is definitely, there's no other way to say it, beginning the War of Jokes and Riddles by the way the Joker reacts to, the Riddler. And in, basically in the end, we're finding out that this is a confession by Bruce to Selina, his new fiance, to tell him that the horrible things that, that happened and maybe that he did during this war. And it's a very ominous beginning, but like I said, I am a big, Tom King fan now, and reading his Batman, the first storyline was literally 24 issues plus a rebirth. So this is a great, you know, first issue being very ominous, but I know I'm in for the long haul on the joke of, War of Jokes and Riddles. So I'm all for it. And the art once again is Janine, on his stuff. I loved when he was doing his runs on the first, storylines that he did. His stuff is just absolutely gorgeous on this. It sets a tone and a feel for it. So yeah, I'm all in. I know that's weird, me saying that I like this Batman book. I've only said it for 25 issues in a rebirth. I'm saying it again.
So I thought Janine's art in this was unbelievable. Every time I see his art, I'm just completely awed by how good it is. There was a bunch of times where it seemed as though, and I say this in a positive way, he was almost aping a Brian Boland style.
Yes, especially during their opening Joker scenes.
Yep, and I had to look, and I'm like, did they get Boland to do a couple pages on this? It's like, nope, that's how good of a job Mikhail Janine is doing on this. It looks that good.
Mm-hmm.
So I make a point not to read the solicitation texts for books, especially books that I'm reading. I look at the number, I look at the date that it's coming out, I make sure it's the writer that I like, and I put it on the list, and that's it, I'm done. Because a lot of times they might give stuff away in the solicitation text, whether it be overtly or not overtly, or it might skew the way that you're reading the book. I did not know until the very end, as Todd mentioned, that this is Batman almost giving confession of what happened during this War of Jokes and Riddles. The solicitation text absolutely just gives all that away.
Right.
And
I didn't know
think
either.
If I knew that going into the book, I might have enjoyed it like a hair less.
I can see what you're saying, definitely.
Now, the other thing is, in the solicitation it says, in his own words, Bruce Wayne narrates a harrowing, never-before-told story of the Dark Knight's greatest failure and the horrors it unleashed. In the spirit of Year One in the Long Halloween, prepare to see a side of Batman you've never seen before. So, comparing it to Long Halloween, Year One, you know, I think that's gonna, that's going to give the some unfair comparisons to this and those and that, the other thing. And the fact that this leads us to believe, and again, of course, at the end of this, where the last two pages of this story pick up where issue 24 left off, more or less,
mm-hmm.
Whereas this appears to be, and at least from some of the teases that we saw in that one big spread, that one big splash panel with all the villains in it.
Right.
That this may lead us to believe that this takes place before Rebirth.
Reading this, it makes me definitely think that this takes place 1 year after year zero.
Okay.
Because year zero was the Riddler, and spoiler alert, in this, when we see him in the jail, you know, planning his escape, it says that the Riddler has been in jail for 1 year now. And I'm taking that it's right after his first attack on the city, which was year zero. And since this is a story told in the past, do you know what I'm trying to say? It just seems to all work out that way for me.
Right. But again, of course, because year zero took place before Rebirth, where does all this fit into place?
Okay. And this is where it gets sketchy, because to me, when we went into Rebirth, and not Rebirth, into New 52, and came out of New 52 into Rebirth, things, you know, for some books were changed in New 52, and then were changed back to what they were before New 52 in Rebirth. Where Batman, I don't think you have to worry about that, because literally, with a few minor changes, Batman came right out of, you know, the old universe into Rebirth with not a lot of changes, because Damian was still there, this was still there. Of the two books that didn't change during Rebirth, Green Lantern stayed pretty much the same history, and so did Batman with a little tweaks. Now we go back to, we come into Rebirth, and I think these books still didn't change. Like, if I'm making any sense, where Flash took a hard hit, other books took a hard hit, you don't really have to overthink Green Lantern's continuity and Batman's, because they, at the time of New 52, they were like, what's selling really, really well? Batman and Green Lantern. Don't touch them. Fix everything else. So I don't really I try not to overthink Batman.
Right. And it's not so much as overthinking, but I will give them this. Batman, of course, is going to be tied up in all that dark, you know, that dark, whatever metal and all that jazz crossover stuff today.
Mm-hmm.
Over the summer. So this is a way to tell a Batman story without like, okay, where does this take place and what's going on right now with Batman? Well, not right now.
Just like year zero, remember?
Yes.
What was that storyline? That was when the heroes were missing, and it was the Injustice Syndicate or whatever from Earth, whatever. What the hell was that storyline? Do you remember the one I'm talking about?
The Forever Evil.
Forever Evil. That was the way they got around Forever Evil. It was like, well, where's Batman during all this? Oh, we're not even going to worry about it. Year Zero takes place. Batman's for even before Year One or something like that. I don't know. Maybe you are right. Who knows?
Maybe.
But I enjoyed it. That's what it comes down to. And it's an extra size anniversary. All these 25s are $3.99. I didn't know that when we were getting them, that they were oversized story, so I like that.
As do I. I thought this was really good. Don't let me let you think otherwise.
Right.
So the other book that I read that you did not was Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man, written by Chip Zdarsky with art by Adam Kubert. This had been touted for many, many months as this is going to be the Spider-Man story that gets back to the old Spider-Man that you know and love. He's not running a company. He's not being fake Iron Man. He's not dealing with clones. He's not Dr. Octopus. These are the Spider-Man stories that you know and love. Now, I was a little apprehensive. I like Chip Zdarsky. He can sometimes get a little too cute for his own good. A little bit. I haven't read a lot of his mainstream superhero stuff, but a lot of the stuff that he's done for Image goes very, very far. Book like Sex Criminals, just as an example. So, this book is a great Spider-Man story, whether you are a longtime fan like me who's been reading outside of a gap there in the mid-2000s, whether you gave up on the character for a long time and you missed those sort of things, this does a very good job of capturing that sort of aesthetic, but also kind of staying true to stories that have happened more recently within the last 5 to 7 years. You get cameos from Human Torch. You get cameos from Ant-Man. You get teases of old villains, and you get introductions of new characters. One of the guys, when Parker Industries was like kind of like a tech firm before it became like the multinational conglomerate that it is right now in the Marvel Universe prior to Clone Saga, they had like a Wonder Kid there whose parents named him Uatu after the Watcher. He shows back up in this book. A character that was in one of the original graphic novels shows up in this book. So there's a lot of the newer stuff that's in here, but it has the feel of the older stuff. The jokes are there, the humor is there, and it doesn't feel old, it doesn't feel forced. I don't love Adam Kubert's art in this. Some of the faces have a little bit too heavy ink lines on them for me.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I recommend this book greatly to lapsed and current Spider-Man fans alike.
Interesting, because I know I was always not liking the way they went with the Iron Man route. So an interesting Spider-Man book, maybe. Right. Maybe I'll give it a try.
Definitely. I recommend giving that one a try.
Cool.
So now you have one more book that you want to talk about. Now, I did get a chance. I attempted to read this, but time in the day just ran out, unfortunately.
Right. So this is Aquaman number 25, Underworld Part 1, written by Dan Abnett and art by Stjepan Sejic. I think
nailed
I crushed
it.
That's right. Beautiful art by this up and comer. He has a book at Image called Sunstone, which was a fetish erotic love story from what I gather. But the stuff in here is very beautiful, and the story picks up after issue 25 or 24. All you need to know is that Aquaman has been ousted as king by this group called the Drift, with their leader Corum Wrath, who believes that Aquaman's too close to the surface world and that they need to cut themselves off from all that. So using a spell, they make this dome of thorns-ish that cuts Atlantis off from the world above. And in it, we believe that Aquaman's been killed during it. Like during the closure, Mara thinks she saw him die or whatever. So Mara's living at the lighthouse, thinking Aquaman's dead. And we basically find out that, you know, the king thinks he's dead and everything. The Drift thinks he's dead. And maybe, the king's from this, the seedy side of Atlantis called the Ninth Tride. And we find out this is where the lowest level of Atlantis and, like, you know, the workers are and the poor and whatever. And there's somebody down there fighting for the downtrodden, and it may be Aquaman, or it may be the ghost of Aquaman, or it may be none of them. But basically it's an Aquaman-like character doing the Batman shtick, because he knows he can't take on the upper ups. He's like, I've seen the fight, and down here I could do the most good. And he's almost like an urban legend Batman in Atlantis, but Aquaman. And I really like the whole dynamic of that, that we see a seedy side of Atlantis and Aquaman almost doing a Batman take. And I read it, and it was absolutely fantastic, and I think it's a great jumping-on point, as long as you know a little bit, which I think, in the story-wise, they do great exposition to get you there without it, you know, just beating you over the head with everything. It explains everything, and it looks beautiful, and if you weren't reading Aquaman, I think now is the time to get on board for this book. Aquaman Batman is going to be fantastic.
Aqua Batman?
Backwoman.
Backwoman.
Right.
Isn't there a band called the Aquabats?
I don't think you're thinking of Aquabats Teen Hunger Force.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, again, when you had mentioned that you wanted to talk about this on the show, I definitely wanted to read it, and I looked at the first couple pages at the shop, and I'm like, there's a beautiful book, but I'm very far behind on books.
Right, and the other thing about this is, if you want to give it a try, I noticed that the like about 6 pages are a preview in most of the DC books last week.
No, that's right.
If you have something, I know Batman 25 had a special sneak preview of a few pages of it, or 3 pages, my mistake. But it gives you an idea of what it looks like and at least what it feels like.
And see, this is one of those things that I was talking about. You know, Marvel hasn't done this in quite some time. But I remember about a year or two ago when they gave, like, the full free... Now, obviously, they're not going to give the full free issue of this new Aquaman book. But it was in an issue of Amazing Spider-Man where they just put in the back, as part of the regular cost of the book, the first issue of the Tom King Vision book.
Mm-hmm.
Which I had passed on initially because I'm like, nah, it's the Vision. I don't know who Tom King is, whatever. I get Amazing Spider-Man. I read the Vision thing because it was in there, was free, and it was fantastic.
Right.
And here we are, you know, he's writing Batman and everything. So, you know, obviously it's only 3 pages, but that's how this sort of thing works. Put the titles that need the little bit of a boost as the preview or full or however much you want to give away in those books that are your top sellers.
That's right. Give the first taste away for free. Comics are crack.
So that's what we read this past week. Let's get into what we're looking forward to coming out this week. If you head over to longboxheroes.com, every Tuesday around 5:30 Eastern time or so, we put up the poll post, which is a link to all the books that are coming out this week. Whether you get your books in print, whether you get them digitally, whether you get them sent to your house, whether you wait for the trades, however it is that you get your books, be forewarned, be forearmed, know what's coming out, don't be surprised. And be ready to go. Now, the two things that that we are attempting to do in the calendar year 2017 is, one, guess what the other is most looking forward to coming out. Currently, we're both tied at 13 correct guesses apiece. And also, we're attempting to keep track of all the books that we're purchasing in the year 2017 and breaking out by publisher as well. I think last week was when I finally lapped Todd. And unless there is a week coming up here sometime where I have 0 books... I think this is my year to win as the most money spent on comic books.
See, I don't think that counts, though, because if you're going to say money, I buy absolutes.
All right.
So you buy the most books.
Okay, so there you go. I buy the most physical floppies.
Because I remember when I put forth the theory, I said, should we also do how much we pay? And you were like, no, I don't want to do that.
Because yeah. Maybe next year.
Maybe next year
we'll put our receipts up.
Ooh.
And Todd, it's not like I don't already have a catalog of the receipts that I've spent on comics for the last 9 years somewhere.
Really? Do you have it in triplicates, just in case?
Well, no, that's only in duplicates. I save the receipts, and then I also keep track of the receipts in the spreadsheet.
Oh, my God. That's a sickness.
It is a sickness.
There's no reason for you to know how much you paid for comics. There's none. Other than unless you're paying with a credit card or a debit card until the debit or credit card passes, then I get that. Then I throw them away. I don't need to know. As a matter of fact, when I pay cash, I say do not put my receipt in the bag. I don't want to know unless I use a debit or credit card. Then I'm like, all right, I just want to make sure that, you know, the charge is correct when I get the bill. Otherwise, throw it away.
When I pay with my card, it emails me the receipt.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the fancy system our shop has.
There you go.
And when we pay in cash, you know,
cash-ish.
More times than not, I remember. But there are other times where the receipt is in the bag.
Straight cash, homie.
So, you started the show, so you go first.
I'm looking over your list. Oh, this is a tough one. This is a tough week. I'm going to guess. Okay, this isn't my guess, but I'm going to say Saga is usually the go-to book, But for some reason, I think you're looking forward to Batman Elmer Fudd. That's my pick.
It is Batman Elmer Fudd.
Yes! Nailed it!
So, looking at your list, I'm not even going to have to, like, him and ha or scratch my chin or whatever it is. But the book you're most looking forward to coming out this week is, without a doubt, Jonah Hex, Yosemite Sam.
You almost said Joe, and I was going to say yes. Get Jonah, and yes. Yes, it is Jonah Hex, Yosemite Sam.
But that's the thing. It's under a normal week. You got Saga 44. Mm-hmm. You've got The Return of Black Magic. You know, obviously, either one of these Looney Tunes books could have been my pick. But the Batman Elmer Fudd one, after reading the Lobo Roadrunner one this past week, I have absolutely no idea what to expect from that book.
I totally agree. I read that book, too, so it was fantastic. It wasn't on my list last week, though, but just relax. You don't have to go changing nothing. But I was like, so I'm looking forward to, and with me, Jonah Hex, I mean, I think you might almost always get a free layup on a Jonah Hex book each week.
Oh, absolutely. And they don't come around too often.
Not anymore.
Maybe if this book sells like gangbusters, it will.
I hope so.
So I do know that we did have a Todd's Art Attack this week.
Yes, we did. Oh, my God, you're on top of that.
That's right. Mega Mass Power listener of the show, Jesse DeJong, at Jesse A. DeJong on Twitter, tweeted out a page that he purchased from X-Men Unlimited number 20. And it is a beautiful-looking page. And I miss the days when pages still existed on that paper. I know they still exist on that paper. But I highly doubt there are very many people who are using that paper in 2017.
I think there's more than you think.
Mm-hmm.
But there are more digital people. It was actually funny because my text will blow up from a certain fancy gentleman whenever he sees art that he likes. And he'll be like, find that for me. Or at least where I could like ask about that. So I did get a request to look for a Andrea Sorrentino page from Secret Empire number 4 or 5, whatever one that he did.
Right.
And I did my due diligence and research and found out that it was in like 2014 or 13. Andrea Sorrentino changed to all digital.
Right.
So that made me very sad. There's still a lot of people who do the money pages for on paper because they can sell them. Like, but if you're going to do the talking headshots, it's faster and quicker, and they're not going to sell to do them digitally. But the thing I miss the most is I love stuff on that paper. I miss the old word balloons when they used to actually cut and paste them on the page. They don't do that anymore.
That was before my time.
Oh, you go looking through my collection, you find a couple with words with that and sound effects and everything. Oh, like you'll never see that ever again.
Well, no, you just clip art them in, and you're good to go.
Ugh. Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah. So while you're over at longboxheroes.com, be sure to check out all the other stuff that we have over there, whether it be past editions of the Pull Post, past editions of this show, past editions of Longbox Heroes After Dark, past Todd and Joe Have Issues. Everything that we've ever done on the internet exists at longboxheroes.com and will for perpetuity. While you're over there as well, you can click on the little store icon and purchase a shirt or a sticker with our fancy logo on it. And if you don't need or don't have one of those, you could certainly purchase anything else in the world to your heart's content, except for these odd 11-inch lanterns that my neighbor likes for some reason, on our Amazon click-through across the top of our page. Anything that you purchase through Amazon gives us a little bit of a kickback. I'm not going to give you the hard sell of keeping the lights on, or bounties, or Prime, or this, that, the other thing. I'm sure if you listen to other podcasts, just take when they say it and pretend they're talking about us and come do it with us.
Yes.
Now, notable purchases from this past week. Someone purchased the most recent trade of American Vampire. And And for the third week in a row, someone is going Funko Pop crazy, specifically more Star Wars Funko Pops. You got Obi-Wan, you got Greedo, you got a Tusken Raider, you got a Gamorrean Guard. Now there's no Darth Nihilus Funko Pop, but then you're doing something else with those Funko Pops. Maybe this person is getting them all so they can, like, do one of those stop-motion videos to put up on YouTube where they recreate the movies.
That would be fantastic.
Now, in watching this person's purchasing habits, I have not seen a Jar Jar Binks Funko Pop come up yet. I don't even know if there is such a thing. Give me one moment. This is important information to check.
This is the stuff we give the listeners, the need-to-know information. Meets the Jar Jar of Funko Pop.
There are Jar Jar Binks Funko Pops. If this person purchases a Jar Jar Binks Funko Pop, I may have to have a discussion with them about how they're using their income.
I just looked up Jar Jar Binks Funko Pops on Amazon, and they are not cheap, my son. They are expensive.
Okay, so I take that back.
Buy as many as you need.
Buy as many as tall as you are.
My weight in Jar Jar Binks Funko Pops.
You know, $55 to $200 seems like a fair price for a Jar Jar Binks Funko Pop.
The best character in Star Wars.
Good gravy.
He's going to be in Han Solo, I hear.
Him and Opie Cunningham.
That's right.
We talked about it last week as the news was breaking. And Opie Cunningham is the official new director of the Han Solo movie. How about that?
I think he's going to be the narrator, too, I said.
Oh, that'd be fantastic.
I've got a bad feeling about this, Chewie. He did have a bad feeling about this.
We would never make fun of Jar Jar Binks.
That's right.
Oh, my goodness. I'm sure someone does.
Oh, instead of maritime law, it'd be like space law. I'm a crook, Captain Solo.
Oh, my goodness. All right, moving on.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get into Todd and Joe Have Issues.
Mm-hmm.
Todd and Joe Have Issues number 11, or Todd and Joe Have Issues Deadpool number 11, written by Joe Kelly, with art mostly by, and I have it right in my, Pete Woods. And so this happens from time to time when I have to do the write-ups on the website. I probably could have written 1,000 words about this comic book.
Right.
I love this comic book, Todd. If you looked at my copy of my physical copy of this book, you would think as though someone, like, dropped an elbow on it. It's a little beaten up because I've read it a lot because I like this comic a lot. I'm guessing prior to this, you had never read this.
Nope.
All right. So let me just give the premise real quick as it is over there on the website. Deadpool, attempting to use his teleporter and having an interaction with Doorman of the Great Lakes Avengers, instead of teleporting away, time travels back to 1967, specifically issue number 47 of Amazing Spider-Man, where his captive prisoner partner, Blind Al, has to pose as Aunt May to keep that side of things off of his back, and then Deadpool himself poses as Peter Parker in the hopes of finding his friend from back in the day, Weasel, who is just a young college student at this point, in the hopes that he can convince him to help him repair his teleporter belt and get him and Al back home. And doing so, he runs afoul of Norman and Harry Osborn, Gwen Stacy, Mary Jane Watson Parker, before she got Parker on the end of her name, and Kraven the Hunter. What did you think of this book?
Okay, are you sitting down, Joe?
I'm sitting down, Todd.
I wasn't crazy about this book.
Aww.
Okay, first of all, you are the Deadpool fan. you are the Spider-Man fan on this show. I will totally concede that. I have not read a lot of Spider-Man, and I've read maybe, not counting guest appearances, but with Deadpool's name on the marquee, I think I've read 2 Deadpool books before this in my entire life.
Wow.
I'm not a big Deadpool fan. I actually find the character kind of annoying. So as I was reading this, I'm not a Spider-Man fan. I'm not a Deadpool fan. You're going to get a little bit of a ribbing, as it goes on, because right out of the gate, he curses in the first 3 panels that he appears. So I was like, this isn't the real Deadpool, because apparently the real Deadpool doesn't curse.
Wasn't it censored though?
Yes, it was censored, but I know what it was. As soon as I know what the word is it's the granddaddy of them all.
Hmm.
So it's not that hard to figure out from the cadence of the sentence, but I was like, oh, so I can't read this. But no, as I was reading it, I was kind of like, all right. And I don't know the Spider-Man issue. And I really overthought it in a way that I was kind of like, now I kind of want to see. I was always thinking about what was here before they force gumped it, if that makes any sense.
Right. Now, I noticed, because it was on sale last week, I purchased the digital copy. Mm-hmm. In the print copy, they actually do a reprint of the actual Amazing Spider-Man issue.
Oh, really? That's cool.
Yes.
So the digital one that I purchased didn't have that. So.
Right.
So it was interesting. Did I hate it? No, I'm not saying I hate it, but there was a lot of nothing for me, if that makes any sense. I read it. I laughed a few times. There was a few jokes that I got that I liked. The ribbing of Osborn's hair is fantastic because that's like something, just the fascination with his hair is amazing. And then there was like one or two other jokes that I can't think of. The Great Lakes Avengers, every time we went back to them, kept taking me out of the story.
Okay.
Because it was to see the old art. And then even though like Pete Woods does what he can, you know, he's a very good artist. I like it, but it was weird to see like, you know, that old style, you know, Spider-Man 47, was it?
Yes.
Artwork, and who was that? Was that Romita by that time?
Yes.
So you have Romita Senior art, and then Pete Wood. I was like, oh, this is all too jarring for me, and this was one of those that seemed like a very, very long book, because back in the day, books were many, many, almost twice the length sometimes. So this was like 46 pages at some point.
Right.
And I'm kind of like, oh my God, just end this book already.
Aww.
Just, I need out on this, man. I can't take it. But I did hear it the whole time in a certain person's voice. So that did make it better.
I'll pretend you're saying it was in my voice.
Right. The old JS is what it was in.
Aw, I'm sad you didn't like the issue.
It happens. It happens. I'm not a Deadpool guy, so.
I get you.
But
they all can't be winners, Todd.
I'm sorry. I thought it would be better to be honest.
I know. Listen, I agree. The one thing that I forgot, and this is, you know, obviously there's a book I like very much. The flashback stuff is my favorite stuff, of course. But the part that I forgot about was that the Great Lakes Avengers were in here calling themselves the Lightning Rods.
Right.
Trying to horn in, because at the time, the Thunderbolts were to the rest of the Marvel Universe still baby faces. They had not been revealed to be the Masters of Evil in disguise.
Right, so they were ladling their warmth.
Right, and that joke actually pays off like a year and a half down the road in Thunderbolts itself, where mm-hmm. the Great Lakes Avengers come looking for revenge because the Thunderbolts turned out to be bad guys and by proxy gave them a bad reputation.
Who is the Mr. Fantastic pastiche?
Flatman.
Flatman?
Yes.
I will admit the questioning of Flatman's sexuality throughout the issue was funny. That was like, because he went to, what, he knew... fashion.
Right. And you knew think the type any of man shoe who was, and when it was made and yeah.
Right. Anybody who's a fan of fashion is okay in my book.
Right, because you are the your favorite thing about professional wrestling after the coked out promos is the fashion.
And if you can mix those two at any time,
uh-huh.
Boom, boom, you're golden. But yeah, I like that.
All right, so Todd, what do we got for next week?
All right, so we were talking about a bad comic that they made a great movie out of. Now it's time to talk about a great comic they made a bad movie out of. And since we have Jonah Hex next week as an issue we're going to talk about, we're also going to talk about Jonah Hex number 26 of the 2006 run, though, that's written by Jimmy Palmiotti. So that's the book that we will be reading.
Issue 26, you said?
Yes, I did.
This was New 52, right?
No, that was All-Star Western.
This was that's right.
This was the Jimmy Palmiotti with rotating artists, because they were usually one-shot stories for the 70-issue run.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one that jumped out to me because it is not a great representation of Jonas Hex as a character, but a great story in that you have stories that stick with you years and years and years after you read a story or a run of comics. And that was the one that always trickles back into the back of your head whenever you think of it. And that's this one. I don't want to say too much about it, but I think it's called Jonah Hex 26, a Grindhouse Western.
Oh, boy.
Yep.
So there we go, Jonah Hex 26 for next week. Possible review of possibly three TV shows next week.
Oh, three episodes.
Three episodes, oh. We'll see. And I think that covers everything.
Yeah, short show this week because we didn't have a lot of stuff, not a lot of news, no TV shows. But you know what? I think we'll make up for it at the end of the week.
Right. I know not next week's show, but at least the show after that, we'll have Spider-Man to talk about.
Oh, that's right. That's right. We'll be going to Spider-Man, and hopefully we'll have all our fingers after the 4th of July.
I've been growing a couple extras just in case.
Mutations.
Yes. All right, so for Todd, this is Joe closing out episode 352 of Long Box Heroes, and we will catch you all here next week.
Remember, be a faucet, not a drain.
Boo!